Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Welcome back to me. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hey, good to see you, Tay. I'm doing good. Working both ends of the candle, but I'm doing good.
Doing these shows, man. That's a lot to get done.
They're killing me. I'm an old man, and it's hard to keep up with all this. And I keep having to carry heavy stuff.
Oh, you can't do that. You got all your joints are bad.
You're right about that.
Carry things.
You're right about that. But there aren't any young people. Young people don't want to work. We got to do all the work. Young people don't want to work.
Hey, now. All right, boomer guy.
Boomer alert.
I know. Sound the siren. Well, we just had 4th of July weekend, I guess, passed.
You were enthusiastic about all the fireworks.
Oh, yeah, it was great. It's still going on, I guess, as far as New York is concerned, or at least Brooklyn. There are still fireworks every night. But I will say the 4th was, I don't, it was just like every angle, every side, all around me for like 3 hours straight. And I'm glad people can celebrate and have something to enjoy. But it was a lot. Jack was just embedded under the couch like, I'm never coming out again. This is the worst. Jack is my cat.
Well, all the birds around here were acting weird, too, because they were shell-shocked from all the explosions and everything.
Yeah, I bet that's a real bummer for birds.
Yeah, they don't like it.
Oh. But you know, the 4th of July got me thinking about... I haven't celebrated a lot of 4th of July just because usually I'm working. It's a good holiday to be behind the bar. You make a lot of money. So I think I've worked most all 4ths of July for most of my adult life, except for one, which stands out in my memory. And that perhaps spawned some reminiscing that led to today's topic.
Well, do tell.
You'll allow me to indulge in a memory. Well, I think it was 2015 that I actually spent the 4th of July not in America. I was in Japan, and I spent it climbing Mount Fuji.
Woo! And you made it to the tip top.
I did. I made it to the top. It was hot at the base of the mountain. It was like in the 70s. And I could not believe... People warned me that I'd need like long pants and a jacket. And I'm glad I listened to them. Like, I didn't even... When I packed for the trip, I didn't even bring long pants. I just had shorts. So I, like, on a whim, got a pair of jeans that day to wear going up the mountain. And I'm very glad I did, because, like 70s at the base, like, full-on blizzard at the peak is the situation that I hiked into.
Man, that's like living in West Virginia and the weather extremes.
I guess so, yeah. And I was like, took about 5 hours to get up the mountain, and along the way I had like a backpack full of clothes, and just along the way I kept putting on more clothing. And I'm like, okay,
till eventually you didn't need the backpack anymore.
No, the backpack was empty, and I was wearing everything. I'd worn everything, or I'd consumed everything, because I also put like some, you know, like convenience store sandwiches and stuff in there. It's a long hike, and it was really, really an amazing experience, really cool to do. By the time we got to the top, I'd befriended some of the people that I rode the bus to, like the base station for hiking with. They were other Americans that were stationed on a military base nearby, and only a few of them made it to the top with me, actually. But those that did, I'd brought a tiny bottle of Yamazaki, a Japanese whiskey, because this was right before Yamazaki became a little too too desirable to sell in convenience stores, so you could still get like little bottles of very nice whiskey in Japanese convenience stores. They still have other lines in that Suntory whiskey are still available in convenience, but Yamazaki's been priced out. So we had this tiny bottle of Yamazaki, and we each had the tiniest sip because alcohol affects you very strongly at both high altitudes and when you're dehydrated, and we were at both.
And in the cold. Of course, we blew that myth. It doesn't keep you warm.
No, it makes you feel warm, though. It definitely just a little bit made us all feel warm.
Right.
Also, there's a place you can get ramen at the top of Mount Fuji. There's a little ramen shop there. It's very bare bones. It's, you know, largely just a hut that you can kind of rest in, but they will sell you ramen. And, you know, things get more expensive as you go up the mountain as well, which, you know, makes sense, you know.
That reminds me of some of the freeways that I've seen. Last exit for gas for 44 miles.
The bathrooms, you start having to pay to use the bathroom up the mountain. Like,
oh, well.
Yeah, you got to, like, a little coin fee. It's not much. It's like a U.S. equivalent, like a dollar or like $3, depending on how high up you are. But you got to, they're aware. You don't have anywhere else to
Wow.
go. You got to pay for it.
So that's why you start seeing more yellow snow as you go up higher, huh?
No. Well, you're like the ramen, in one sense, it was the best bowl of ramen I've ever had because I was hungry and tired and cold. And here was this hot, beautiful bowl of ramen. But also compared to like everywhere else in Japan where the ramen was like half the price and 10 times more delicious because there's just a lot of delicious ramen in Japan. But it's still the best bowl of ramen I had in Japan because it was at the top of Mount Fuji.
I don't think I've ever looked at a bowl of ramen and thought, boy, that looks delicious.
Oh, well, you're thinking of, like, the top ramen, like, packaged ramen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, like, there's, like, real ramen.
Oh, real ramen.
Yeah. You know, like, you go to a restaurant that makes ramen. That's what they do, and it's good.
Oh. They don't just take one of those packages and boil it?
No. Some of them even make their own noodles. So it's a whole other experience. You're missing out.
Oh. I haven't seen it. I've led a very sheltered life.
Well, that's... If you ever make it back up here to New York, I'll make you go out for real ramen.
All right. Although, as long as I don't miss out on burgers and beer to do it.
Well, there's that stuff, too. but all of this is to say that I've been reminiscing on my trips to Japan. Of course, no one responsibly went anywhere for fun this past year, and that's totally fine. That's the right thing to do. But... I had a ticket to go to Japan in 2019 that I moved to the summer of 2020 because my bar had a fire back in 2019 and I knew I was going to be out of work and, like, you know, I'd work all year to save up money for like a week and a half in Japan. Like, it's not, you know, it's a lot of effort that goes into affording the trips that I've gone on in the past. So knowing that I was going to be out of work for like a month or two because of the fire, I just knew I wouldn't be able to afford the trip. So moving that ticket to 2020 obviously meant that ticket was not usable.
It was pandemic sized.
Yeah. After a lot of back and forth with like the third party ticket website and the airline, both saying it was like the other's job to refund the ticket or honor it, I just finally gave up on it. I was like, okay, it's going to be a while before I can return to Japan. But you know, with the hot weather and everything, it's got me thinking of my favorite things to drink when I'm there. While I love Japanese whiskey and it's great, and Japanese bartending it's some of the best bartenders in the world, some of the best bar programs, all of that's amazing and they deserve their own episodes. But today I wanted to talk about my favorite cheap thing to drink in Japan. Since I can't have it, we can at least talk about it and maybe make some in the video, and that's a chuhai.
All right. Never heard of it. Never had one. Don't know what they are, but okay. Sounds like a good topic to me.
Well, a chuhai, depends on where you're getting one. It kind of can mean a different thing. So at base, a chuhai is basically shochu highball. So that's where the name comes from. Shochu highball chuhai.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's usually like a mix of soda, sometimes tea, fruit juice, sometimes a combination of these things, and shochu, and like just generally associated with like cheaper izakayas, kind of casual bars with food, more than like high end bars. So it's sort of an everyman's drink.
And you said that shochu is kind of similar to like vodka.
So that's a good point to bring up. Shochu is often compared to vodka. It's also often compared to soju, which we talked about, I think last year we did an episode on soju, which is a Korean spirit. So I think it's good to hit on what it is and what it isn't and how they're different. There's a lot in common between all of those spirits that I just mentioned. Vodka, soju, and shochu can all be distilled from a variety of starches or sugars. You can use sweet potatoes, barley, rice, wheat. You can use carrots. You can use sesame seeds. All of these things can be the distilled, like the source for the starches or sugars for your distillation. All of these things are typically not aged. They're typically served young. Now, the differences come in so the difference between like shochu and soju, the Korean companion spirit, is that shochu is more highly regulated. You can't have any additives or sweeteners, anything put in there to enhance the flavor. And it's typically a higher alcohol. So soju can have sweeteners, can have additives, and usually clocks in like in the 20% alcohol range. Shochu is generally more like 25, 30, sometimes 35. You can see it up to 40. But that's where it runs into the differences with vodka, because vodka, while having some of the similar distillations at its base, is usually distilled to 40 and above, and is distilled to kind of remove all flavor components, you know?
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's pretty bland.
Yeah, whereas shochu tries to have a sense of terroir. So they want you to have a sense of what it's distilled from. You know, if you've had a barley shochu, you can get some hints of barley. If you've had a sesame shochu, you can get some hints of sesame. Whereas vodka, if it's distilled from potatoes or it's distilled from wheat, there might be a subtle note there, but a lot of vodka tries to, like, distill away from flavor.
It's just alcohol.
Yeah. So it sits in the same general idea as these spirits, but shochu definitely has its own identity, sort of, you know, contained in that it is highly regulated, has a sense of flavor, and sits a little bit lower alcohol typically than vodka, a little higher than soju.
All right. Now that we've cleared that up.
And that's also, like, shochu could be a whole episode in and of itself, so I'm not going to go too deep into the history, but it's been in production in Japan. There's evidence of it dating back to the 1500s. It was typically just a distilled sake, so they'd make a rice wine, they'd distill that wine into shochu. But farmers began experimenting with other produce they had available to kind of develop this idea of a wide offering of shochu. Now, while it was a popular spirit in Japanese history, it really hit its stride and found its way into the Chuhai post-World War II in Japan. So basically, Japan emerged from the war in a depression. Crops usually used for beer or reserved for fine sake and fine shochu were needed to feed people. So they were left with a lot of poor quality rice as their only distilling option. Now, distilling did seem the best route over fermenting, which would maintain more of those bad flavors. So they ended up with a lot of shochu. That's what they could make at the time. And it didn't taste great. So they kind of took a page out of Prohibition's book and thought the best thing to do with all this not quite great shochu is the same thing that Americans did with that not quite great gin that they made during Prohibition and cut it with things. Enter soda. Mm-hmm. Introduce a little local fruit juice as well. Originally, it was probably just something simple like lemon or grapefruit, and the Chuhai was born. And this was sort of, you know, throughout the 40s and 50s, this was just sort of a blue-collar drink. This was a working man's drink. This was just a way of drinking some rough around the edges shochu alongside the return of, like, cheaper beers.
So they just were slapping some lipstick on that pig.
I guess so. But you know, that changed when you get the economic boom of the 70s in Japan. And this kind of led to, like, the popularization of izakayas, basically Japanese gastropubs. Izakayas, if you haven't been in one, I mean, you probably have. You might have not known it as an izakaya. But, you know, it's a Japanese restaurant where they've got a very, like, limited sake shochu menu, nothing complicated. Usually the guy that's making your food might be also making your drinks. Like a very, like, usually a bigger menu of food, snacks, small plates. It's really casual. It's comfortable. It's not anything like fancy or highbrow. It's my favorite type of restaurant, honestly. And you see a bunch of these with this economic boom. You have all these people that were used to, like, not even being able to afford drinking in bars or nicer establishments, all of a sudden have money and bringing their palates into the restaurants, into these places. And thus, things like chuhais were made in restaurants and bars to cater to the palates of those, that working class group of people that had now elevated their economic status.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting how it became, went from an old man's drink to the popularity of all the young working people.
This happened, you know, and there might be some confusion when I throw around the word highball, because the same thing happened to the Japanese highball, in the sense that when you order a highball in Japan, you're usually going to get whiskey and soda. It's typically, so that term specifically, without any other connotation, is just whiskey and soda. But the same thing happened there, where you had whiskey going from something that wasn't available to kind of an everyman's drink and pairing it with soda, and then, you know, move into modern times where now whiskey is incredibly high end in Japan. But yeah, this is that era where you've kind of got the blue collar workers bringing their palates into the bars, and their particular drinks are getting elevated along with their economic status. So shochu was hip, and so was the chuhai. In fact, one brand, Takara, actually, they had a shochu that they were kind of specifically marketing to the younger crowd. They got David Bowie in on ad campaigns.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So we know there's a long history of celebrities, American celebrities, doing ad campaigns in Japan, including David Bowie.
Well, you know, it surprises me because it evidently has a real popularity in Japan. But they don't really sell it outside of Japan, or at least they don't sell it to the United States. And I don't know if that's a production thing or a law thing or what, but it seems like something that was that popular over there, they'd want to introduce it over here.
Well, shochu is pretty widely available. You might not get the every, you know, every shochu isn't distributed here. But I will say, because, you know, in the 80s, this is when you first start getting the canned chuhai, the ready-to-drink chuhai. And that is something that I'm very surprised has not been imported.
Yeah, that's the one. That's what I was talking about more than the sochu, was the drinks that have derived from it, that the canned or bottled drinks.
Well, and that, so around the, or in the 80s, this is when we get the first canned chuhais, the ready-to-drink ones. This is sort of an evolution. There was this product called High Sour that was released in 1980. That was like a carbonated lemon beverage meant to be cut with sochu. And then Toyo Shuzo and Takara Chuhai, like, were introduced around the same time, 83 and 84. And they were both just kind of cutting out the middleman and pairing shochu, a sweetened lemon soda, in a can ready to go. So that's when we get that born. And, I mean, throughout the next several decades, every major brewery would throw their hat in the ring with a Chuhai line. You've got Takara, you've got Asahi, Suntory, Kirin. They all come out with these growing ranges of chuhais. The alcohol can range anywhere from like 3% on the low end up to 12%. You can have simple flavors like lemon and grapefruit up to like very eclectic flavors, salty plum, bitter orange, sudachi, lychee, sour grape. It's really been like an explosion of a category over a couple decades, starting in the 80s on up to the 2000s. And it is worth noting that a lot of these brewers opted in vodka instead of shochu to appeal to a wider palate, because shochu, like I said, it's meant to have a flavor. It's meant to taste like something. So in order to appeal to people that might not like the taste of shochu but might like everything else that Chuhai has to offer, some of these companies, and you have to kind of check on the can what's actually using shochu and what's using vodka or distilled spirit.
What I thought was interesting was some of the marketing for it, because they market it, first of all, as being low alcohol drink when they first started bottling and canning them. And so they kind of took the same route Guinness did, and they talked about it being a healthy drink to have because it doesn't have the sugars and things like that a lot of other drinks would have. So even though you had alcohol in it, it was being marketed as a healthy drink, and that was pretty much generally accepted that it was. And then as popular as it was, what they started moving towards is increasing the alcohol content in it, and those started becoming the better sellers, the higher alcohol. So, of course, if they start becoming the better sellers, then what does the rest of the market do? They copy that.
Right. Yeah, now you get, like, the strong, Chuhai strong. It's always very big on the label, and those are, like, the 10 to 12% ones. But you can find them. I mean, that is something, it's interesting because it's an idea that is echoed in Japanese bartending as well, that you can go into a Japanese bar, order a drink off their cocktail menu, and you might get a drink that rounds out to very low ABV. It might be like a 5 to 8% alcohol cocktail, like a very low alcohol drink. And that's not marked anywhere on the menu. They don't really separate things into low ABV, high ABV. Like we do in American bars, if you go into a restaurant, order a cocktail, you're assuming you're getting around 2 ounces of hard spirit, unless it's otherwise mm-hmm. noted. Japanese bartending is not really concerned with that. And I think it's the same with this line of products, where there are the higher alcohol ones, and they do sell, but there's also a lot of tourists that I think factor into that. But you'll have like the, you know, there are some flavors that it's 2%. It's very low alcohol, and it doesn't really, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the focus of the drink. Is it necessarily the alcohol content? It's a bit more of how the alcohol affects the flavor. How much shochu do you have in there that's flavored to a certain degree? So I do think that's something that I actually kind of like about Japanese bartending and really respect about it, is that it's not always just about like what drink's going to get you like wasted. It's how much alcohol do I need to balance everything else? Because alcohol affects your palate as well, you know?
Not only do they have ones that are strong, then they have ones that are double strong. Mm-hmm. They came out with the double strong ones after that.
But they also have ones that are purposely alcohol free. So you mm-hmm. can go and get a Chuhai that has had its alcohol removed. You could also find like non-alcoholic beer is a very big category in Japan, because people mm-hmm. like the taste of beer, but they don't want to get drunk. There's hilarious ads like for non-alcoholic Japanese beer, where it's people like at the office drinking a beer, and everyone's like, "Oh no, you're drinking a beer!" And they're like, "Don't worry, it's alcohol free." I'm like, "Yay!"
Yeah. Well, by the same token, you know, there's different ways, I guess, that different societies look at things. And they were talking about one of them that's kind of a lemon flavored one, and it's only 4% alcohol. And they were saying it was marketed mostly to women.
Well, that's also this idea that you need to sub in the vodka is because women prefer things that don't taste too aggressive.
Yeah. And then one of the other ones that I read that I thought was pretty entertaining is it said it's popular with both office workers and casual drinkers. What the hell does that mean? Well, office workers and casual drinkers. I never break people into those categories.
But, you know, we talked a bit. We did an episode on Japanese, like, the culture of drinking in Japan. That actually makes a lot of sense if you know how much office workers typically drink in Japan. That's kind of like
saying. Someone so the office workers.
Not too much.
So for in American language, we would substitute that as alcoholics and the social drinker.
I mean, not across the board. The culture is changing, but yes, I think that's the implication. same with this, like, you know, it's not. Japan is not the only people to think, like, oh, if we want to get women to drink, we need to make lighter, refreshing flavors. Like, that is the history of American style pilsners. Like, that's why Budweiser tastes like it tastes. Like, we made those to cater to women working in factories in World War II. It's not the only sexist drink design, but it is worth noting that that is something you come across, and I don't love that, but it is part of the history of the appeal of the Chuhai. Like, oh, women will drink it if we make it not taste like anything.
Yeah,
get light. But I do think it's worth noting that it's light, it's fruity. They're not sweet. It's it's this continual frustration I have with this proliferation of alcoholic seltzers in the American market. I keep thinking we're going to get something that tastes like a Chuhai.
And they don't.
Nothing does. You either have something that's extremely sweet, you know, like a wine cooler or a Mike's Hard Lemonade, or something that kind of just tastes like alcohol and seltzer water that, like, looked at a peach from across the room like White Claw. And we don't get anything that has, like, a full fresh fruit flavor.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. That they don't go for that. Not only that, I think, though, the American palate is so used to sugar, even if it's fake sugar, that if you just gave somebody, like, you know, the way I understand these drinks are made, just lemon juice and not any sugar to it, they wouldn't like it, you know? I mean, or they don't, you know, it's not the normal palate that you have in America, I think, is a lot more geared towards sweetness.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because you were talking a bit about some, you came across some of like how, because that's the thing, I don't understand how does a Chuhai taste like, because how it tastes. Like, what is the science behind it? Because a lot of, when we think of ready-to-drink things in liquor stores, they tend to be like, we just assume they're not good. We assume they're kind of overly sweet or maybe not the best, like, production methods. But this is not how these drinks are viewed in the Japanese marketplace. Like, a lot of effort went into making something that tastes good behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, in this particular one, they were saying they take the lemon juice and freeze it with liquid nitrogen and then mix that in, because they said concentrate. This is not a concentrate. This is just straight lemon juice mixed in, whereas a concentrate, you have to dilute it. And this you don't have to dilute.
I think that was Suntory that did that, correct? They would, like, make a, and they'd make it out of the whole lemon. They'd basically, like, make a lemon powder, but it would include the peel, because they realized that one of the advantages to the fresh made Chuhai in a bar is that when you squeeze that lemon, yes, you're getting lemon juice, but you're also getting the lemon oil from the peel, and that, mm-hmm. that part of the flavor was really important. So how do we preserve that in a massive production line?
Right. Well, they came up with ways, but it's all geared towards freshness too. Yeah. All the juices and everything they want to use to be fresh. They don't want things processed or concentrated or watered down or sweetened or preservatives. Everything's geared towards fresh.
No, and they are like it's always a balancing of a budget when I'm traveling in Japan, because the high end is high, but the low end is very affordable. And, you know, I might go and treat myself to like a drink or two at one of these very fancy bars, but I'm probably finishing my night by going to like the convenience store and getting like a rice bowl that costs $4 for dinner and a couple Chuhais, because they're so cheap. Like, you're talking about like just a couple bucks for one of these, like, mm-hmm. maybe like some as low as like 150 yen, which is like US equivalent, like $1.50, you know?
Yeah.
They're very cheap for what they are. And they hit this like sweet spot where they're not very sweet. They can be very strong. They don't have to be. And they're very refreshing. And you don't get that chemical hangover that you get from a lot of, even like some of the hard seltzers. I'm like, how? What's in you that makes me feel like
sugar?
Yeah. But it is worth noting there is one brand of it's Takara that makes it, which is one of the original Chuhai creators that sells in America. It's a little hard to find, and they call it J-pop, which is fine. They come in glass bottles, not cans. But that is a Japanese product if you've ever seen that. But it's designed for international marketplaces. And they only have two flavors, grapefruit and white peach. I've had it a couple times. They have it at my local Japanese market. It's fine. It still doesn't fill the void of what I miss when I think about canned Chuhais.
Well, I read some reviews about it when I was doing my research, and that's what it said. It said, if you come across J-pop and try that and think that you're trying real Chuhai, you're not. That's a pale equivalent.
It's a little sweeter is the thing. Like, I think it's formulated for an international marketplace. It makes sense, but yeah, it's sweeter.
Now, I would think that it got the attention of a big enough manufacturer that I would think that we would maybe get something over here, because it said that Coca-Cola entered the marketplace in Japan in 2018 with their version of it, and it's called Lemon Dew.
Yes. Yes, Coca-Cola now has a Chuhai. I was hoping that we would get a Japanese Chuhai, but instead we made an American Chuhai in Japan, which I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I guess it has alcohol. I mean, maybe it's alcohol-free. I don't know, but it just said Coca-Cola's doing it. But I don't know if any alcoholic drinks Coca-Cola's during here, unless you're including a rum and Coke.
I think so. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, this is like the canned Chuhais are something that are not to be missed. I think they're delicious and amazing. And I have a pretty okay palate. Like, I can't drink a lot of the heavily processed stuff, and I think they're great. But I will say that alongside of this, the bar Chuhai, the fresh Chuhai, still exists very much in Japan. Still very available. You know, most izakayas, you'll see a little Chuhai menu of various Chuhais you can order. And there are even Chuhai bars in Japan. A couple, what was that? That was maybe the trip after, maybe my second to last time I went there, I was there with a fellow bartender, and we found a Chuhai bar that was, it was so cool. They literally had a selection of shochu you could choose from, so you could choose your shochu. You would choose your fresh fruit juice. There were herbs you could add in. It was almost like you know those, like, design your salad bars?
Yeah.
It was like that, but for a Chuhai. So you'd pick your fruit juice, you'd pick your herbs if you wanted any, you'd pick your shochu. And they even had two different kinds of soda you could choose, like mineral water. And they would make you, on the spot, fresh, squeeze your juice, like a fresh Chuhai. And it was delicious, and it's very cool. And that's, you know, so it's definitely, you know, both still exist. And they're similar but not the same. But they're both things you should experience if you are lucky enough to get to go to Japan.
I'd like to try that. I would like to try that. That's not a wet willies, but still, that'd be pretty good.
Oh no, it's very, everything's like very, like, you watch them squeeze your juices fresh, you know, they like muddle the herbs in. They've got like the soda is on like beer taps. It looks very fancy.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then also just like, even if you're just in like a casual izakaya, sometimes you'll order. I ordered Chuhai, and this actually, there's a place here in New York that does this too, where you order a Chuhai and they give you like a glass of shochu on the rocks, a little bit of soda water, and then they give you just a half a grapefruit on like a individual squeezer. So mm-hmm. You just kind of construct it as you will right there, and it's good. Huh. It's nice. Yeah.
Well, I think the neat thing about that is, you know, maybe you would like to find out exactly what you like best, and that kind of gives you all the elements, and you can kind of tweak it till you find what you like best.
Exactly. It's great, like, for the summertime especially. Like, you can't go wrong with something bubbly, a nice, clean, bright spirit, and some fruit juice. It's very simple. I think you can make it complicated. You can make it high-end. I've definitely seen bars put high-end Chuhai on their menu. And that's fine. I respect that. But, like, it's also just, its roots are very much a working man's drink, and I think that's where it's strongest.
Well, I look forward to trying this. Hopefully I can find some sochu here. Yeah. And if not, you've got a backup plan for me, so we'll do something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you can't, I'm going to be working with some, I'll get some shochu, but if you can't for some reason find it, I think the next, I don't know, maybe go to soju, maybe go to vodka, we'll figure it out. But yes, definitely on the video, I think the fun part's going to be just making some on-the-fly combinations of Chuhais, see if we can get anywhere close to what a canned Chuhai tastes. I've tried many times on my own, and I don't know. Maybe it's just it might just be the memory, too, the sense memory of the place and time that affects the taste. That definitely plays into it, but.
Well, absolutely, because I remember telling people for a long time, best beer I ever had was that time we were at Busch Gardens. And, Busch Gardens was right at the factory to make Budweiser's right there in their backyard, you know. And you were getting fresh beer right from the brewery, and I'm like, this was the best beer I ever had. Now I think about that. Oh, my God, Budweiser was the best beer I ever had.
No, that absolutely does. I mean, and similarly, like, it was the first time that I had a Chuhai, and it was canned Chuhai, was when I had first gotten to Japan, and they had, like, a little kiosk in, like, the train station, the underground train station. So I was waiting to get my train to go to my hostel. There was a hostel the first time I went. And they sold Chuhais. I didn't know what they were. And there was a nice older woman who was speaking to me in English, who was asking me, do you want a drink? This is what these drinks are. And she just kind of walked me through what they were. And I was like, oh, that sounds nice. And I was like, but I can't drink it now. She's like, no, you can drink it now. Like, you can drink it in the train station. You know, FYI, drinking in public in Japan is not illegal, but it is frowned upon. Yeah, like,
Is this a Ross and Rachel type frowned upon?
Well, yeah, it's like, if it's after, what I was told by a Japanese friend is that if it's after dark, it's more acceptable, but if the sun's still up, you definitely shouldn't do it. I think there are differing opinions, but by and large, you won't get arrested for it. You might get some looks, but I had a little old lady who was telling me it was okay to drink a Chuhai in the train station, so I did. And I was like, it was like lemon. It was plain. It was nothing special. And it was just like, just this refreshing, delicious drink after being sweaty and scared and confused trying to find my way from the airport to, like, the random train station I needed to be at. I'm just sitting there next to this old lady drinking a Chuhai, and I'm like, this is awesome.
So in Japan, public drinking is okay at night, but not during the day. Whereas in Savannah, they insist on putting a drink in your hand day and night wherever you're walking down the street.
Yes, but then in New York, you might get arrested randomly for walking down the street. You know, it's a kind of, in Japan, it's just like, just be respectful. You know, drinking during the day might be disrespectful to the people around you.
Well, that's because you're showing up the office workers that are the real drinkers. Because they got to work in the office still, drinking fake beers.
When we were researching that episode, I thought that was very fascinating, just the amount of, like, I don't know. There's part of me that wishes we had that in our custom and in, like, American business, where it's, like, very important. Like, you go out to work, or you go out after work with your coworkers, and you drink, and that's where you reveal yourself, and that revealing of yourself is very important for team building. Like, your bosses want to see you shit-faced.
Yeah, yeah.
And they can know if they can trust you or not.
I've seen some things about that's the culture. They expect you to go out and do that and then make it back into work the next day.
Yeah, which can be bad. Obviously, there's massive bads out there. We talked about that in the episode. But I do kind of admire that, like, no. We want, part of our team building is we want to make sure, like, you know, you could party. That's bad. It's probably bad. It sounds nice to me.
It's probably good unless if you've got a long career, that could really wear on you.
I think it does. I think it's a nuanced conversation.
But, yeah.
And it's not our culture, so we're not here to judge it. It's, you know.
No, I'm just saying I couldn't live that way. Well,
but if you are if you're hearing this episode and you're in Japan, I was going to say pour out a Chuhai for me. Drink it. Don't waste it. Hopefully in the next couple of years, I'll be able to afford that opportunity again. But, woof, it's definitely missing it this time of year.
Well, it sounds refreshing. We'll have to see what we come up with.
Yeah. Well, we'll do our best to replicate it. But if you got access to the real thing, good for you.
All right.
Well, hey, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Taylor, for having me. As usual, I always learn something.
There you go. As always, if you want to support us, we have a Patreon. We have rewards, stickers, coasters, bespoke videos, all sorts of fun stuff. You want to check that out. If you want to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to email us, you can email us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. And if you want to join a community of like-minded drink historians, there's a Facebook group.
At Neat the Boozecast. group page thing where we're at. We're there. I don't know.
Some combination of those words. We'll get you there. Every week, I joke about how you don't know what it's called, and yet every week you do not look up what it's actually called. I love it.
I don't know where you look. All I know is it's on my phone. When I look at it, it's there. I have it as a group to go to. It's in your groups.
It's somewhere there. It's like a fun treasure hunt.
My bar back fixed it in there for me.
Yes. And as we mentioned this week on the video, we'll be making some chew highs. So check that out if you're interested. That'll be up later this week. As always, I have been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me. First, were telling me about it, I thought that you said too high, and I was like, "What? We're gonna be too high?
Too high?
Yeah, we're gonna get too high. What? What are we doing? I thought we were talking about drinking, not drugs."
I mean, look, as soon as THC is legalized for sale in New York, we'll be making. That'll be a whole other episode. All right, we'll get there.